3, 2, 1, we're back. Hey, it's Sunday. What is the date today? August something or another.
Second.
August 2nd. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, I didn't know this until like 10 minutes ago.
What?
We switched, we went from Blog Talk Radio being essentially where we loaded all of our podcasts, and then Blog Talk Radio would syndicate it on iTunes and Stitcher and all these other places. So we switched from Blog Talk Radio to Podbean because Podbean had a more efficient system. Well, another thing Podbean does is it says on your podcast what show number it is. And until this morning, and like maybe 15 minutes ago, I didn't realize that you and I have done 3,076 podcasts.
I know.
Holy crap.
I know. We didn't believe it, so we calculated it, and it's actually true.
Yeah. We thought maybe Podbean did it wrong, so we redid the math. We checked the math. It's like, holy crap. But I never even really thought in terms of having actually done 3,000 shows.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
That's a lot of blah, blah, blah.
Especially from you. No, I think that's awesome, though.
So I had an interesting email yesterday, and I read the email, sat on the email, and then I actually called the person as a surprise. Mm-hmm. And the gist of the question, it was a long-winded question. It was, like, way too long. And they were kind of, and I was trying to understand what the heck this person was. It was a guy. I was trying to understand what the heck he was asking me about, because he was kind of bouncing around, going from this topic to that topic. But really, the essence, after having read his email twice, the essence of what he was asking me was, is how do I, like, I can't attach myself to what it would feel like to be rich, where my money's working for me, I no longer have to work for my money. And so because I don't have any real tactical, practical, my words obviously, experience with what that emotion feels like, I can't attach myself to it. He was trying to be introspective, and I was appreciating it, so I was giving his email a lot of extra effort, and then, like I said, I surprise called him. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, a very valid issue. Because
sure,
if you've never, like, if you've never experienced something, there's no way for you to meditate on it, for you to try to manifest it, for you try to, you can do all these things, but the lack of the actual emotional attachment to knowing what that would feel like is a inhibitor to you being able to accomplish the goal, because there's nothing that's going to be a stronger pull than you to, for you than being emotionally attached to something.
That's for sure. And it's hard to do that if you have little exposure to it or experience with it. It's funny you mention that, because in the treasure map, when we're doing the goal setting section, there's 12 questions at the end of each goal in the goals of 5 areas of life. And one of them is, who do you know who already has this?
Right.
Or has lived this way? And I review those treasure maps quite a bit with our coaching clients. And it's, you're right. Most people don't have that kind of exposure. They can't say, well, a lot of our clients are the wealthiest people they know already.
Yeah.
Themselves.
Which is a problem.
Which is a problem. You have to go to a different sandbox.
If you're the richest person you know or the best agent in your office, it's time for you to upgrade.
Yeah.
And so that's something that's really kind of a fascinating, challenge a lot of people have, is if they haven't actually experienced. And I was thinking back, trying to explain to him that was what the problem was, or maybe what the problem was with him, is that he was lacking that exposure. Again, it's a very classic problem all of us have. And I broke it down to this, though I still am not sure this is the greatest way to explain it. But I remember the first time you and I had really good French cooking. I mean, it's silly as an example.
No, I totally remember that too.
Yeah.
It was in New York City.
It was in New York City. You remember the name of the restaurant?
I will in a second. It sounds like Butler, or it's something in French, obviously.
Yeah, something in French. Well, so having had
it was
that
amazing too.
Having had
making hungry.
Having had the experience of what it's like to have really good food, if you would have tried to describe it to me prior to having that experience, mm-hmm. I would have just sort of been respectful and polite and sort of shook my head and trying to relate to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it was, is I would have absolutely no attachment to what you're saying because I never experienced it before. So for you to try to relay an experience to me that you've never, that I've never had before is, kind of an exercise in futility. And there's a lot of other things in life like that as well. There are so many things in life that, Julie and I strive to accomplish. And then once we've accomplished them, and we've talked about them on our past Sunday podcast. Oh, we should give our disclaimer.
Yes.
I never forgot. This is our
Before
Sunday.
Before we go down a rabbit hole.
This is our Sunday podcast where Julie and I debrief from the previous week, and then we sort of focus in on what's coming next. And we talk about whatever the hell comes to our mind.
Which could be anything.
Which could be anything. I mean, in past podcasts, we talked about the booming sex doll industry.
Yeah. Not the normal show, everybody.
We've talked about aliens on the Sunday podcast. We've talked about...
a lot of weird real estate stories.
Whatever the strangest things that... Like, I intentionally try to seek out bizarro news to try to shock her with, but as you guys can tell, after 29 years of marriage, it's very difficult for me to find anything to shock her with. Exactly.
Keep trying, though.
I will.
It's a good hobby to have.
It is a good hobby. It's like an obsession.
It is.
Yeah, you used to be super gullible. Of course, that was like 1,000 lifetimes ago,
about,
but still.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, if you're trying to understand what it would feel like to experience and to have really good food, and your best experience was a really great experience, but it wasn't something on that level, there's no way anyone's ever going to be to explain it to you or sell you what the emotion's like.
No, and we're not talking about a classic McWhatever upgraded cheeseburger. We're talking about, like, the real deal.
We don't need to be condescending.
I don't mean it that way. I mean...
You know, maybe they went to Ruth Chris's, or maybe they went to some really fancy restaurant, and it was a fantastic experience, and it was maybe exceeded your expectations, and it was all that. But then until you... And again, we walked into this experience not knowing what it was going to be like. Actually, a travel agent friend of ours, he set up this whole trip for us and had us, you know, go to that restaurant. Yeah, Richard Lewis did that.
He did a great job.
He did. So that was an experience that sort of reset the bar for us when it came to, you know, eating and, you know, all the rest of it. That completely and totally 100% rocked our worlds. And now every time, you know, we have something that's not on that level, which we've only had something on. Mm-hmm. When we went to Italy, there were several, you know, experiences that were similar.
That same restaurant is in the MGM in Las Vegas. We had a very nice meal there once.
Yep. But it wasn't the same as New York, though.
Still wasn't as good.
And so what's it like to experience being financially free, to be rich? It's a hard emotion. It's a hard experience to try to, like, convey because of the fact that you haven't experienced it. And it's just like, again, we can go, you guys can think of your own examples of things that maybe exceeded your expectations and totally emotionally reset the bar. Here's one that most of you guys can relate to. You know, Zoe Grace came in our life about 7 years ago, 6.5 years ago, actually. Yep. She was born on January 1st,
New Year's Day,
2014. And so she has been, you know, for you parents out there to try to explain it to Julie and I what that is like. You could have been the best writer or best anything, doing your best amazing job describing what children would be like. And many of our friends with kids,
they tried.
And nothing could have said, or no emotions that you tried to convey would have anywhere come close to what it's actually like.
I agree with
good
that.
And bad.
Mm-hmm. Life altering.
Yes. I mean, but good and bad, honestly.
Yes, but experience wise, you can't. It's not like, I used to think, a lot of people think, well, you know, we've got dogs. We're used to taking care of stuff.
Exactly.
It's not like dogs.
No, it's not like dogs. It's not like anything.
Much as we love our dogs. It is very different.
Being responsible for little humans is completely on a different level. It's not a uniform. I'm not a believer that it's a uniform, like everyone should just be doing it either.
No.
No, I don't think it's true.
Not for everyone.
You and I didn't. We waited until we were in our early 40s to have our first kid and our only kid. And maybe we shouldn't have waited that long. But I'm not sure if we would have been as good of parents as we are now if we had the kids.
So.
You know, I don't think so.
For us, anyway.
For us, yeah. Now some people are completely different, and we have lots of friends who are our age whose kids are having kids now, which is kind of amazing to think about. You know.
Yeah, and you know, if you want a really big family, obviously, you know, that's a different lifestyle and a different trajectory, and that's awesome too.
Well,
but I used to never understand those people.
Yeah, me either.
I'd just be like, how can you have, like, we have a coaching client right now that has 4 under 5 years old. That's a lot of work, man.
And we have, Julie, we have somebody.
I think it would be a blast.
We have somebody who works for us that has 6 kids.
Yeah.
Under 12. 6 children.
That's amazing.
Did you know Corey had that many kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, when you put all this stuff in perspective, and you're trying to, I'm trying to answer this guy's question, and he's trying to attach himself emotionally to what it would feel like. And so here's what I came up with when I called him. And it's kind of basically my best attempt, but I'm going to share this with all of you guys. The only thing you can really do, and so, like, you don't, I can't express it like this because it sounds egotistical, but until you don't have to think about money, do you realize the importance of having money? having money or being financially free where your money works for you, you no longer have to work for your money, having that as something in place, what it does is it makes it so that you don't actually have to think about money anymore. Not thinking about money anymore as an omnipresent, you know.
As your prevailing thought.
Or even if it's not consciously prevailing, mm-hmm. it's subconsciously prevailing.
Sure.
And to not have that as a thing that's a dark cloud around you, you don't know it's a dark cloud. This is what I was trying to explain to this guy. Like, he doesn't know how much of his thinking and his behavior and his emotions and his stress and his just every decision he makes in his life, mm-hmm. he doesn't recognize, and, you know, it's impossible to, how omnipresent the dread or the challenge or the whatever word you want to use of, you know, fear of money, especially in your commission base and all of that, how that is a absolute emotional, psychological, and spiritual burden. You don't realize how much it is until it's gone.
It's a whole mindset. It's not just one fleeting thought now and then when you go to buy groceries and you're checking prices and maybe using coupons. It's pretty much a prevailing scarcity mindset is underlying, and it's also obvious. It's around you all the time. Every decision you make when you have a scarcity mindset is...
I'm not sure it's a scarcity mindset. I disagree with you on that point. That's not what I'm trying to express. When I'm trying to express what I'm
a different thought, maybe.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. It's a kissing cousin to the point I was trying to make. The point I was trying to make was I was not trying to explain to him the scarcity versus abundance mindset. That's the easy button.
No,
right?
All I'm saying is if you're in the habit of saying I can't afford it, or I'm not going to afford it, or I don't want that because it's too much, it's much more challenging to cross the bridge to what you're talking about, where you become comfortable with the thought that your money actually one day can work for you and you can have that freedom.
Well, absolutely. That would be a roadblock on the way. But even past all of the sort of, you know, the institutionalized boilerplate mm-hmm. mindset conversation about this topic, because none of it gets you there.
No, I agree with that.
Julie, I could explain to you until the cows come home how amazing the French food at that restaurant in New York was. But there's no, everything I would say would always fall short. I could explain to you what it feels like to have a little kid, but, you know, back when we didn't have little kids, it doesn't compare.
Nope.
I could explain to you what it feels like to, you know, you and I 20 years ago, 15 years ago even.
And that doesn't mean I don't get it conceptually. It means it's not the same being explained to.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, intellectually you can understand it. They're just words, but you don't have any emotional attachment to it. Right. So what I was trying to do is I was trying to figure out, and I still am. You guys can, Julie and I are bouncing this back and forth. You could tell she didn't know I was going to talk about this, right? Sunday is unstructured. But like, how do we make somebody feel the feelings of essentially not having to think about money anymore or not having the burden of having that emotional baggage? Because once I think you experience the emotions of what it's like, stay with me, listeners. Once you've had that really great French meal, or once you've, you know, had that experience with the, you know, experiences with children that make you realize how much more significant life really is. Once you've had those experiences, you don't go back. I mean, you don't go back from, I can never just like hard reset my brain and all of a sudden have, you know, mashed potatoes taste like that French food, right? I mean, everything is completely changed forever.
Yeah.
And same goes with kids. I mean, if someone, I can't ever, I had a mindset before that was a little bit maybe lackadaisical about being having a family. But now I couldn't imagine not having a family, right?
Too.
I mean, it
took, to your point, having a family.
It took the emotional experience. But those experiences, they literally hardwire your brain.
Definitely.
And I don't mean this in a mindset-y, bullshitty way, in a woo-woo way. They literally hardwire your brain. Your neurons and everything inside your head communicate differently once you have these experiences. So here's what I suggested that to this guy that he does. First of all, and this first one is easier said than done, I realize. Again, if you don't have any emotional attachment to it, but do your best to try to imagine. And done through meditation, frankly, helps. And you don't have to overanalyze what meditation is. It's just basically you by yourself with your thoughts. And you're just trying to meditate on what it would feel like. And just choose one thought to try to sort of, you can't really have any thoughts when you're truly meditating. So, you know, don't overanalyze again what I'm saying, because I know some of you guys are experienced meditators and you're going to send me a 20-page dissertation on how to basically meditate. You're missing my point.
Yeah.
The moral of the story is you have to emotionally connect with the feeling of no longer having to worry about money ever again the rest of your life. And you have to try to do that even if it's just for a millisecond. Even if it's just for a tiny, tiny little, you know, fleeting moment, you're going to never forget the incredible feeling of reprieve from just the ordinary daily stresses that you just take for granted as being normal. Hopefully that makes sense. And everyone and everything around you is also swimming in that, or they're all, you know, everyone's crabs in the same bucket, basically. And so when you all of a sudden, you're a crab in this, you know, the bucket, the old crab story, right? You put a bunch of crabs in a bucket, one crab tries to get out, the other crabs pull the other, you know, pull the escapee back into the bucket. Yeah. And that's in essence how we're all sort of stuck in that reality. But if you can, for a second, be the crab that gets one little beady eye over the edge of the bucket, right? Yeah. And you can see that, hey, on the other side of this bucket is the ocean in which I just came from before they threw us all in this bucket. Next stop, you know, some dinner plate. But if you can, you can throw one little beady eye over and you can feel what that sense of freedom would be like, you will never be satisfied being stuck in that bucket again. And somehow, some way, you're going to escape from the bucket. So it's impossible for someone to really, you know, have an epiphany much more than through emotions, right? So what an epiphany is it literally is a chemical release of endorphins. It's a chemical release of adrenaline. It's a hormonal sort of reaction to sometimes a thought, sometimes an experience. But if you can give yourself that aha moment, that's what a lot of people call it. So if you're looking for an aha moment and you want to know what it's like to be rich, where your money works for you, you no longer have to work for your money. And let's drill down what that actually means, because some people, especially in this sort of bizarro parallel universe world where rich is evil, you know, that's really how people are painting it. But if you can attach yourself to that emotion of never having to worry about where your grocery money is going to come from, your mortgage payment, retirement, you know, health bills. Anything and everything that you now have floating around in your head, you have constantly in your head working antivirus software in the form of worry, right? So if you could all of a sudden purge your mind of that sense of worry, and the antivirus software could finally just sort of maybe not be the most dominant thought pattern that was controlling all other thought patterns in your brain, if that were gone, what's on the other side of that is true freedom, because you would have freedom of thought. You'd have more freedom of your time, certainly freedom who you associate with. But mostly what you'd have freedom of is you'd have freedom from worry. You'd have freedom from that, you know, 1,000-pound gorilla that we all carry around on our backs, which is the absolute fear of not being able to basically, you know, provide for your family and whatnot.
Yeah.
There's no other way to express it. I that's how I tried to do it with him. So just if you can somehow emotionally attach yourself, and then he can reinforce that with listening to through podcasts, though it's difficult to know, because a lot of people are tall hat, no cattle.
Yeah, or have an agenda.
Right. I mean, so many people out there are who act like they're financially, you know, they're rich where their money works for them and they no longer work for their money, but they're not. They just basically are playing a part. They're trying to be, you know, social networking stars on Instagram and all this other Mickey Mouse. The whole world right now is full of, you know, narcissism and just, you know, fakery. Just this sort of acting like you're something you're not seems to be rewarded in our society right now. That and being a victim, frankly. But if you can somehow find people that you know are, for a fact, are like you want to become financially, just find a financial role model, or even better, find several financial role models. You'll discover that your ability to emotionally attach and manifest the feelings of being rich where your money works for you, no longer work for your money, you'll find that those emotions strengthen because you're now sort of, you know, doing what Napoleon Hill said, which is you're forming your own mastermind. So there's two things, if you don't mind vamping on. The first one would be essentially what rich is and how it's attainable by everyone listening right now. It's not some huge number. It could be a relatively. And then talk about the mastermind concept.
Yeah, well, I was thinking you were reading my mind, so I would say you put a thought in my mind.
put a thought in your mind of cleaning your room?
I'm working on that one.
Or doing your homework.
She seems resistant to those.
Too smart.
Too smart. Yeah, she's got her force field on.
Diet Coke, not a beer. Diet Coke, I just opened, not a beer. Coke, some of you are accusing us of opening alcohol beverages on our... We don't drink on our podcast. No. This is Diet Coke.
Exactly. So rich is when your money is working for you. A lot of people think that, you know, if you were to interview a person on the street, oh, that has to be a million or millions of dollars. They have never actually figured it out. And again, I go back to the treasure map because everybody's number is a little bit different. But really, it's when you have your personal and business overhead covered, you're debt-free, you have passive money coming in, or relatively passive as possible, and you really are not having to schedule yourself the earning time, it's coming in for you.
Well, staying drilled down, when you go on, if you go into a, like a retirement calculator, or if you talk to a stockbroker who basically are their salespeople, nothing wrong with that, just pointing out a fact, and you tell them, I want to retire at 67, and I would want to be, and they're going to figure out, well, you're going to get Social Security, and you're going to have less overhead because you're going to be living in a condo opposed to your house, and your kids are going to be gone, and you're going to be eating ramen noodles opposed to steak.
Right.
And so you're going to need approximately this much coming in per month, and you're going to need to have this much saved, which means you're going to have to, you know, scrimp and save, and you're going to have to somehow basically live, you know, at a level in your current incarnation while you're earning so you can be saving for the future. I mean, that's kind of the version of what they'll tell you.
And they'll give you an approximate number of what you've got to sock away.
But the problem is that that model, it does work, but it's really unattainable, and that's the reason so many people never accomplish it, because the number they're going to throw at you is going to be $1 million or $2 million. Now, you can invest, and you could dollar cost average, and over time, the stock market, and this, that, the other thing. Well, guess what? What if you reach the retirement age, and it's during a down cycle in the stock market, where you were able to save up that $1 million, or whatever your guy told you 20 years before you had to save, and all of a sudden, that million's worth $450. And now you're 67, and all you've got is Social Security, and you're going to somehow figure out a way to try to live on, you know, 3 or 4% of 450 per year, or whatever it actually works out to. You know, that's what they do. So they'll say, okay, well, if you had $1 million in the stock market, we, you know, you could comfortably pull out 4% per year, or at $1 million, you'd be able to pull out $40,000 per year plus Social Security. Well, most of you guys listening, that's going to be about $5,000 or $6,000 a month in retirement income, which you could, you know, for the most part, you could make that happen. But why wait? And that's Julie and I's philosophy, and it's been our philosophy forever. We originally got there through buying paid off rental properties and paying them off, or paying them off in the first place when we bought them. And we bought really nice single family houses in, you know, five different states, and these rental properties, all of which we still own. And by the time we were, you know, Julie was 40, I was 41, we had enough income coming in from those rental properties to meet or exceed our personal financial goals. Julie says personal and business. I just say personal because it's easier to wrap your mind around it. So for most of you, and here's the little thing that should be a sense of relief. For most of you, if you had, say, $7,500 coming in per month, you would be rich by definition, because if it were coming in passive, it wasn't coming from real estate transactions, it wasn't coming from the sweat of your own brow. It was basically money coming in as if you'd had, you know, essentially in that case would be something like $2 million a month, or $2 million saved, and it was pulling out, you know, $8,000 a month. You'd basically be at that point, you'd be able to, retire. Now, you wouldn't be able to have a fancy vacation, or, you know, wouldn't be paying.
But you could live.
But you could live comfortably. You would have the financial burden released forever from your life, and you can accomplish that. Most of you guys can accomplish that through, and we're going to give you, essentially some shortcuts. In a second, and this is not what we planned. We had no plans of what to talk about. It's a good topic,
okay,
though. No,
it is.
Yeah. So most of you guys can accomplish that in your lifetime. Most of you can accomplish that in 5 years or less. So let's just operate off the idea that you need $7,500 a month. Now, I know some of you in West Coast or East Coast are it's going to be more like, you know, $20,000 or $25,000 a month. So adjust accordingly. And some of you that are going to be maybe $3,500 a month or $2,500 a month. But what we want to help you create is the emotional attachment to the idea that you could have money coming in passively that would essentially meet or exceed your personal financial obligations and, in some cases, goals, thus making it so you no longer are essentially having to work for your money. Your money is working for you.
Well, Tim, let me jump in here, because it's not just emotionally attached to that thought. It's emotionally attached to the thought that not only can you do it, but it's not going to take you forever.
No.
This is not, you know, I mean, I feel like the accumulation of rental properties and paying them off took us forever, because that was a lot of work.
It was. And I don't think we do it that way. We wouldn't do it that way.
Hell no. but I just wanted to focus on what you're about to say, which is it's not going to take that long.
No, that's right. And Julie's bringing up a really, you know, I should have drilled down on this. If you have it in your head that you're always going to be a slave to having to earn money, right? And you're going to have to do that your entire life. And maybe someday when you're reaching this mythical retirement age, you know, assuming you have the health and you have the wealth and all of that, all the stars will align. But you're going to be, you know, at a point in your life where you're not going to even want to do as many of the many fun things you could have otherwise done in your life. And furthermore, your family is going to be, if you have one, is going to be grown and out the door. So you wouldn't have been better to have been financially free when you were younger, when you could have really enjoyed life more. So look, you can accomplish financial freedom as long as you basically cut through the bullshit, which is what Julie and I had to learn. No one ever told us what we're telling you guys now. Like the definition of rich, that's something Julie and I thought of, because when we have, when we hit that number with our rental properties, and it was over $20,000 a month, you know, net, we felt for about 2 seconds rich, and then we realized that three of the rentals needed new roofs. Four of the rentals were coming off, you know, lease. There was a rental with a flooded basement. There was a rental where, you guys get the idea. So the rental property was, when we were coming up in life, the essence of the only way that, other than maybe having a really successful business, which we did, or being attached to some sort of, you know, initial public offering, which we hadn't, but rental properties were really the only safe path forward, the only assured path forward for normal Joes and Josephines to have any sort of, you know, shot at financial freedom or independence. And so that's what we did. That's the dog we chased. That's the rabbit we chased, rather. So as far as the first thought I have is, all of you should realize that most of you can be completely financial free, or at least give yourselves permission to start focusing your best energies every day on something other than making sure you have enough steaks in the freezer, i.e. savings. And, you know, you, most of you are, you get complacent financially when you have 2 months of consistent cash flow coming
That's
in.
True.
And I hope, hopefully from this pandemic that hits back in March and it's going to be around for a long time, hopefully you're realizing that having 2 months worth of savings is a bad idea. And a lot of people have gotten so addicted to living on debt. I was having a fun conversation with one of our neighbors, and he's very successful, very wealthy, and he's debt-free, and so are Julie and I, for the most part. And, you know, there are certain things you do want to take out debt on when the interest rates are super low, but we might touch on that. But he was talking about the fact that I don't have any debt, but pretty much everybody I do business with in every way, in every capacity, has debt. And it's an interesting thought, because if you, for example, let's say you're a dry cleaner, and let's say your store is paid for, your equipment's paid for, you have no debt, but you're in this, and let's say you're even positioned perfectly in an upper middle class, you know, rich area where people get their dry cleaning done on a regular basis. If you hear wind blowing, it's because there's wind blowing. Julie and I do this Sunday podcast at the beach. And so, okay, that guy seems like he's perfectly positioned to have a lot of years of consistent success, and all of a sudden the economy slows down. And his business is still, you know, everything's paid for, everything's rock solid, he's got money in the bank, everything's great, but then all of his customers stop coming. And all of his customers, let's say a lot of his customers are well off too, but, you know, they're carrying some debt. And then they, you know, their debt, ability to meet their debt obligations collapses. And maybe the companies that these guys work for in this little small town, maybe they're not able to, you know, you guys get the point. So the domino effect of essentially having our economy that's predicated on the ability to borrow. That's really what keeps the U.S. economy afloat, is the ability to borrow. So many of you wouldn't be living the lifestyles you are now, and I'm not just talking about houses and car loans, but the people that you do business with, real estate agents, when you're, you know, doing selling a house, that person's most likely borrowing the money to buy that mortgage. And maybe they even borrowed the money to, you know, start a business, and maybe that, you guys get the idea. It's all a bunch of dominoes predicated on people's ability to borrow money, and it never ends. So when you get to the point where your income comes from sources that are not dependent on people with borrowed money, ability to borrow more money, then you're at a financial freedom at a different level, because then you've stepped aside from a lot of the, I think, fragility of the economy that we're going to start seeing playing out going into next year. That sound like a long, breathy diatribe. Does it make sense?
Yeah, but that's an excellent secondary point with having the money coming in, but having the consistency of it and not being dependent on the economy, not being dependent on everybody else's economy, not being dependent on
interest rates. Well, look at our tenants.
You know, yeah. I mean, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the last recession, how many people I can go through thinking like, you know, like you would go to get your haircut and talk to the salon owner, and she's like, yeah, people are waiting a lot longer than they used to get on a haircut. What is that, $19? But she was dependent
on... Oh, you mean during the recession, because people didn't have the money.
Yeah, they didn't. And I remember so many different instances of that where, you know, anything discretionary is over with.
Right.
But to your point, having not just having the money coming in, but having the security of it being month in and month out for the rest of your life.
Well, that's the problem. That was what we discovered with rental properties. That's what we discovered.
Even paid off.
Right. I mean, so our tenants, there was an article, and we're going to talk about this on timandjulieharris.com, our main, it's a blog website with tons of articles. We put up 4 or 5 new articles a day. I sent it to you, Julie. Mm-hmm. But the consensus is that there's going to be some sort of, foreclosure. Well, it's going to start with an eviction sort of, the eviction moratoriums are going to run thin. Yeah. You're going to see, they're projecting, 43% of all residential tenants in the United States can't make all or any of their rent payment. Mm-hmm. So there's an absolute, apocalypse that's going to, assuming there's not massive government intervention or continued massive government intervention, there's an absolute apocalypse that's going to be happening to rental properties across the United States. And again, read these articles on timandjulieharris.com. I realize nobody else is talking about it, but
it's a ton. I mean,
it's a ton. It was 43%.
It's 33%, but that's still a lot of people. That means that 12 million renters could face eviction over the next 4 months. And in places like New York and Houston, more than 20% of renters say they have absolutely zero confidence in their ability to pay rent next month.
Right.
And all the while, new leases are also down pretty much everywhere.
Yep. So all of us who were basically planning on, saving and scrimping and getting by and doing everything, living below your means to buy rental properties and, putting in all that extra work and just everything. The investment thesis that all of us have been banking on for all of our lives is essentially under attack. And now we talked about on last podcast, on last Sunday, we talked about the fact that it does look like, assuming Joe Biden were to win, and I don't know if he is, I'm not being political, but if he were to win, he's already basically said 1031s are going to be on the chopping block. In other words, people's, flippers and whatnot who were taking the profit from one property, rolling it to another, delaying having to pay the tax man. And a lot of you who are doing flipping, that's been your, that's what you've been doing. Well, if you all of a sudden have to start paying capital gains tax every time you do a flip, you're going to have to factor that into the equation, into the math. So if you're having, if you make, $50,000 and all of a sudden you have to pay, say, 20% in capital gains tax or $10,000, you're going to have to start running your potential flips through a different set of, equations. And you're going to find a lot of the flips out there, flippers out there, aren't going to be able to make the numbers work, and yep. They're going to not. So that's going to have an effect, unintended consequences. But then you look at, for example, the other thing, and I personally find this the scariest of all the potential headwinds to rental properties. All these cities are already saying that they're running a budget shortfall going into 2021. And they're all basically saying the only mechanism, because we can't increase sales taxes, because it won't make a difference anyway, because, people aren't going out and buying stuff. And right. So, essentially the sales tax lever, we can't really manipulate that much because it is what it is and it won't give us that much of an effect. But one thing we can do, these are the cities that are thinking like this, is we can raise property taxes because people won't have a choice to pay them. Mm-hmm. And they'll have to pay them whether or not the economy is going up or down, whether anything is going up or down. So you're going to see, and we were reading articles about the states that have, you'd think be the most conservative, have some of the crappiest budgets, like Texas. Mm-hmm. There's so many of these towns in Texas where the government officials, there's another article I sent you. Did you see that?
I'm reading it.
Yeah, about the government officials, like the staff and whatnot of these different cities and how much mm-hmm. they're getting paid.
I was reading the one about beach towns suffering from people not buying stuff.
But it was in Texas. It was in Texas, actually. Of all the mm-hmm. states, you would think this would be the last one. There was over 6,000 people working for these little cities that were getting over $100,000 a year.
Wow.
And there are people in Texas that have these, not even like governor, like the governor makes less than a lot of these comptrollers. There's people in Texas that work for like the city of Austin and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They're earning $250,000. There was one, I think, that was earning like $541,000 a year. And so all those bureaucracies, essentially, they're not going to have layoffs. Have you heard any of your cities and states talking about laying off employees? Neither have I. And they're protected by different unions and whatnot. So what they're going to do is they're going to basically go after property owners. And if you're, we're planning on retiring or living off the cash flow from your properties, well, guess what? Now you're having to share a larger portion in property taxes. And that's going to happen across the country. So I just wonder, if you're wanting to be rich where your money works for you, you no longer work for your money. I'm not suggesting you totally discount rental properties. But you probably
just got a lot harder, that's all.
It did. It just got a lot harder. And you're going to need to look maybe not in your own backyard because you might live in a state that has, frankly, Texas again has really high property taxes. And and what were we paying in Georgetown? 2.2%?
2.3 or 4%? I can't. Somewhere in there. It was a lot.
And I think in Texas,
the
most
every time I get the bill.
I know the most they're able to charge is like 3% or 3.2%
or something like that.
But that's a huge amount of money.
Yeah, but what you sent me last night was in an opportunity zone. So
oh,
there,
I did.
There are still. You know, there's. You just have to look a lot harder.
That one in Amelia Island?
Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting. Well, so we're obviously still looking for real estate, but we're looking for different things.
We're looking a lot harder, that's for
sure.
Yeah,
and we're looking for opportunity zone stuff because you often then don't want to have to be subject to the property taxes at the same level.
At least for a while. Yeah.
Well, so when you're thinking about, okay, yes, Tim, I am willing to be emotionally attached to the idea of being rich where my money works for me and I no longer have to work for my money. The first thing you have to do, and we talk about this in Harris Rules, by the way, our book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible version, paperback version, whatever, but get the book. And the first thing you have to do is obviously you have to have a business that produces enough profit, and then with that profit, then you can reinvest the profit into things that are going to make you passive income. And so I'm going to assume that some of you are sophisticated enough to know that you're going to have to obviously have a good, you're going to be able to be a very efficient business owner to turn out enough profit to be able to leverage some of the investment opportunities you have. But as we go forward, you know, you go through all the usual checklist of things that maybe would produce passive income for you. Well, the stock market. So let's talk about that for a while.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was my next question for you.
Oh, let's hear it.
So let's say I either am there with the rental properties or I've decided that's just too much, you know, hassle and cost for me, too much risk for me. What about the stock market? I mean, you know, my financial advisor is telling me, well, you want to throw off this much money, you've got to invest that much money, and you can count on this percent per year. So let's get cracking.
Well, so it used to be when, again, Julie and I are in our very, very, very late 40s, if not maybe I'm 50, I don't remember.
I'm in my 40s.
Okay.
You're just a little past that.
Okay. But when we were growing up, the thesis was your money would double every 7 years.
Yep.
And you would be, in retirement, you'd be able to pull out 7%. Per year and not ever have to touch your principal. So let me break this down. So if you put in it, let's say over, you know, 25 working years, you invest enough money that it appreciates through the stock market by an average of, you know, it used to be 7% was the assumption. And then once you reached retirement age, what used to be like 63, now it's 67, you know, then you're going to be able to pull out 7% per year because your portfolio. So if you have $1 million invested in it and it appreciates every year, let's just use the word appreciates, by 7% per year, you could pull out that 7% every year or $70,000 basically and never touch your principal. So your $1 million stays in place in your stock market portfolio and your 7% basically is money you can use to live on. And if you figured that into your investment thesis and maybe you're assuming there's going to be Social Security, and you could, you know, comfortably retire if you had $1 million saved, if you were able to pull out 7% per year and Social Security were there. You guys, most of you will remember having conversations like this with whoever your investment advisor is, aka salesperson trying to sell you stuff. So nowadays, they don't tell you 7%. Nowadays, they say 3%, maybe 4%, but let's count on 3%. So you save up that same $1 million, and now you can pull out $30,000 plus Social Security. And those two numbers together, for most of you, mean you're going to be living a vastly different lifestyle. Now, you factor in something else, which in our lifetimes, we've only experienced, and it was as children, called inflation. Mm-hmm. So what if all of a sudden, you're now going to, you know, let's say you've saved up your $1 million or whatever, and let's say it's 67 and your stock market guy says you can start pulling out 3.5% per year, which is what they're going to tell you, $35,000 a year plus your Social Security benefit is, let's say, another, I don't know, let's call it $2,500 a month. Probably not that much, but let's just say that. So you're able to basically have $6,000 a month coming in passively by the time you reach retirement age. But unfortunately, that $6,000 a month is barely going to have the same spending power. You know, so as like milk's going to be like $4 a gallon, you know, property taxes are going to be higher. Everything's going to be more expensive. So for you to live off the passive income that comes from your retirement income, following these old rules that frankly, Julie and I were raised on, it doesn't work. The investment thesis sucks. It just doesn't work anymore. So now you have to save up $2 million or $5 million. Good luck saving up that much money with having to pay that much in taxes. You could earn $1 million per year living in California, and without including your property taxes, you could be renting, and you're still going to pay over 50% in all the different forms of taxes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so it's if you're having a, you know, a house payment and a nice lifestyle, and all that. You should be able to save money making a million in California, even after all your state. But you're paying 13% to the state of California. You're going to be paying in the 30s in federal taxes. You're going to be paying, you know, over 50% in some of these states. That's where your money is going. You're shoveling all out the front door. Now you factor in the taxes that, you know, you don't have a choice. You have to pay your property taxes, and there's the sales tax, and there's, you know, different states have different things. They'll, you know, assess your car is worth this much per year, and you have to pay a registration fee every year based on what the, you know, your local state taxing authority says your car is worth, road use tax or whatever. All these other taxes come after you constantly, and then you're wondering why you're not able to save more money.
And then you end up financing everything and having to have worse cash flow every month.
That's right. And then the Fed makes interest rates lower, and then you're basically, essentially, you've normalized borrowing, whereas before, just 15 or 20 years ago when the taxes, well, actually, you know, when Clinton was president, the taxes were pretty bad. But these are the types of things you need to be consciously aware of. And I'm not saying taxes good or bad. I'm not saying we're not, you know, not being political. What we're suggesting to you is the probability of you being able to retire using any of the old investment theses alone is about zero. And so, like, you could do what Julie and I did, and we did both of those things. We've done the stock market thing, and we've done the rental property thing. And we got to the point where the stock market returns, you know, had we decided to retire when we were 40, which we didn't, but had we decided to do that when we were 40, our stock market returns would have been, you know, that we could pull out comfortably 3 or 4% per year. Our, in the rental properties, even though the rental properties were producing really good cash flow per month, it wasn't consistent. If you know, we have a lot of rental properties in Central Ohio. If Ohio State University, for some reason, were to start having layoffs, we'd see a bunch of properties go vacant. So the lack, ultimately, it's about having multiple spokes that are going to create income streams sufficient enough to cover all your personal overhead, right? So you can have your business, and that business throws off enough. Now that's, you know, not passive, but you have business that throws off enough to pay off your to cover your personal overhead. That's a spoke. You want to have a spoke that's maybe stock market spoke. You want to have a spoke that's maybe a rental property spoke, and maybe you want to have another business. Maybe you want to have. Okay, now let's be honest. How many of you are feeling completely overwhelmed right now by what I said? Right? If you'd have told me all this when I was younger, that's what I had to have accomplished to, you know, finally be rich where our money works for us and we no longer work for our money. Well, I know what Julie and I did do. We said, okay, we're strapping in for the long haul. That's what we're going to do. And we did it. But in retrospect, considering how fast the rules changed, how much the actual, you know, rules book completely got altered over the past 20 years, if I knew now, you know, if I knew, I wouldn't have done it. I mean, we would have bought rental properties. We would have, you know, invested and whatnot. But I don't think we would have. There's other things we would have done, which I want to tell them about.
Absolutely.
I mean, what are you thinking as I say all this?
I think that we probably would have still bought some rental properties, but we wouldn't have sacrificed as much as we had to along the way to do those types of things.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, because we were following that plan, we also made ourselves sell a lot more real estate so that we could do that plan. And we also took a fair amount of stressful financial risk, I would say, especially in the early years with doing like the guaranteed home sale and trying to cobble together enough commission to do a down payment on a rental property that someday we would pay off. And, you know, it's kind of like the top of the conversation we had where maybe that there was a bit of a gray cloud hanging over that in stress that we didn't even realize. But it's because we didn't have a lot of the same opportunities. Literally, we didn't have. We're not just saying we didn't do it. It just didn't exist that these guys have today.
Well, it's kind of...
Had we, there's no way we would have done that kind of drill.
Normally, when people get to where we are, they basically just spend a lot of time patting themselves on the back and saying how their path was the path to follow.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is what we did was the only real path we had to follow. But I'm saying, in retrospect, if I were the 20, you know, we got married and we were, how old were we?
20
and 21, right?
Yep.
And if we are mapping out our plan to get to where we are now, it would have, I think if we would made, we would have made different decisions if it was 2020, and we could have probably done it in less than 10 years opposed to 30.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Yep. But it didn't exist. So, you know, I mean, I'm glad that we did. It's better than not having done anything. We're in a lot better position. Thank you, past Tim and Julie. But to your point, if it's 2020, our current listeners now, if you guys aren't taking advantage of what's right in front of you, I really think it's like malpractice to your own financial future.
How many of them right now are on bated breath wondering what we're going to tell them?
Some of them know.
Okay, Bitcoin. No, I'm kidding.
No, not Bitcoin.
Hog futures. No. No. We want you to short at the airlines.
No. Well, maybe.
Buy gold. Well, you should be buying gold right now, by the way. It's almost 2,000 an ounce. It's probably going to go to 3,000 an ounce. Right.
No.
Here's what we would do. There's no doubt. We would get our real estate licenses. We would absolutely kick ass selling real estate. We'd sell a lot of houses as we did. I mean, you know, what we'd absolutely do is join eXp Realty. And I'm going to give you the real bottom line reason why. Because it will make you, so not only, let's just set aside the benefits to the brokerage itself. The financial widgets that they built into eXp Realty are like nothing I've ever experienced in my entire adult life. Almost to the point where it feels fake. I mean, honestly.
Yeah,
you know?
You have to check your facts, make sure, and yes, what your understanding is actually true.
Yeah, I mean, there's, for example, eXp Realty stock, and again, Jillian, are not financial advisors. Whatever disclaimers you guys need, just understand that we're not experts in any of this stuff. I'm just giving you the anecdotal observations. The stock has more than doubled this year. There are people that we know that were awarded stock, you know, who are now basically have hundreds of thousands of dollars in stock, and they didn't buy any of it. We know people that have millions of dollars in EXPI stock, didn't buy any of it, was awarded with it. I know somebody who has a net worth now from EXPI of over to right around $50 million from essentially stock grants and stock awards that every one of you are eligible for as a real estate agent working at EXP. Now, are you going to end up basically having millions of dollars? Well, you could from EXPI stock, but who knows what the stock's going to do in the future, right? Who knows what the stock market's going to do in the future? But what I'm saying is it is a completely passive source of wealth generation that you would that EXP's got a system in place already to help you basically benefit from that. But more urgently and more, you know, now money is the revenue share model. The revenue share model at EXP is something that if you don't pay attention to it now, or if you somehow are turned off to it, you know, whatever emotional, you know, reason you have for not listening to the huge upside the revenue share model is, your future self is going to absolutely kick your present self in the ass, because you're losing and missing out on what is, without a doubt, I cannot imagine a better opportunity for non-connected humans. You know, if you're born with a silver spoon, if you are, you know, have a friend that's about to take his future Facebook public, if you have a, you know, rich uncle that's going to pass away and, you know, and his last name happens to be Getty, something like that, you're probably not going to have to listen to what we say. But if you're like 99.9% of everyone out there with a real estate license, you have to seriously look at eXp Realty. Again, superior brokerage model, no doubt, but the ability to build wealth inside eXp for normal people, normal real estate agents, is unheard of, because normally what happens is all the wealth is kept by the owners, the franchise holders, the region holders. All the wealth is kept upstream from the normal agent, and the agent is basically just making transactional income. What Glenn Sanford did at eXp is, because he is an agent in essence, he made it so that the agents can benefit in a way that only before the aristocrats or the, you know, the bosses could benefit. He has literally made it so that every single agent who chooses to participate at eXp can have enough passive income coming in from revenue share within 2 to 3 years, 5 years at the, you know, just depending on how urgently you take advantage of the opportunity, that you would never be able to create on yourself in 10 lifetimes. And, you know, again, unless you have some sort of lucky star that happens to be shooting over your head at the very present moment, or you follow the path that Julie and I followed, which, given the same opportunity, I wouldn't do again. You know, it is kind of, it does make me feel slightly emotional, truthfully, when I think about how much time and effort you and I put into the rental properties.
I know.
You know, and what
and not just the rental properties, but all of the things surrounding that, the time, the effort, the stress sometimes, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, water under the bridge.
Well, but think about this from a very practical perspective, right?
Sure.
You know, we bought a lot of rental properties for cash.
Uh-huh.
You know, some of them were, you know, $75,000 that's now worth $225,000, which is what you found that one, which was amazing. You know, it's actually probably worth more than that now.
It probably is.
But guys, so let's just use that as an example. So we bought, what year was that? 08 probably? In Columbus,
that was
Ohio?
Like 10. That was towards the end.
Okay, so it was $75,000. Now it's worth like over $200,000 for sure.
Easy. Yeah.
But that money's in money jail. Okay.
It is in money jail.
It's in money jail. So we have all this, you know, and that house is paid for. We wrote a check for it. So I want you to think about that. Okay, some of you think I'm trying to impress you, but I'm not. What I'm trying to do is shed light on the essentially the way that, you know, we had to think, and many of you are still thinking because you haven't realized what eXp is all about. So we had to save up the $75,000, pay the taxes on $75,000, and then, you know, we had to, frankly, in that particular case, we had to get lucky and find that particular house, which happened to be in our prime hunting ground for rental properties in Columbus, at least it was. And then we had to compete for it. We had to get it. We had to do some, not much rehab, but some rehab to it. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had to maintain it for all these years since. 10 years, 11 years, not a big deal. We can manage it. Now the house is appreciated, right? It's now worth, say, $225,000. So it's $225,000 in equity we have in that property. But we can't get at that money unless we borrow against that money.
Thus wrecking the cash flow.
Thus wrecking the cash. Well,
I mean,
depending how much we borrowed, right. But
it wouldn't be the same, though.
Yeah, and so let's think about that. That house now is worth $225,000, and that house is throwing off, how much does it throw off in net income after?
$1,000.
$1,000. Mm-hmm. All right. So you can whip out your calculator. So that property now is $225,000. We're making $12,000 a year off of it. What is that, 5%?
I'll tell you in a second.
I think it's 5%. It's less. It might be less than that.
It's very close to that, just a tiny bit less.
4.75 or something?
4.8 or 9, yeah.
Right. So if you'd come to me and said, you know, Julie, give me $225,000, I'll give you 4.75.
And that's on a good one, by the way.
And you'd say no. Yeah, that was a good one, right.
Yeah, that was a good
one. And so for us to get at that money is literally locked into a money jail unless we decide to borrow against it, which would make the investment thesis even crappier. So you guys get the problem, the fallacy of the whole investment property thing. Now, Tim, you need to buy multifamilies. You need to buy, you know, big apartment complexes. We've looked into the math and all that stuff, and we've looked into partnering with other people. We've looked into all that. And all that sounds great because the numbers are bigger. You have economies of scale. You have, you know, different ways of leveraging up the properties. All that stuff. But here's the problem. Those buildings have massive expense cycles. Those buildings are always in crappier locations. Those buildings are always going to be in a situation where a new building is going to get built that's going to replace it. That's the reason there's a lot of companies that make those big-ass apartment complexes, and they keep them long enough to sell them, and they go on to the next one because they know that's the nature of how those buildings last. They're never made of that high quality, and when they go into their first maintenance cycle after 10 or 12 years, then you're looking at a lot of windows, a lot of furnaces, a lot of air conditioning units. And if you Tim, what are you talking about, 7% cap rate? Well, let's actually look at these numbers and let's drill down. And by the way, how much money did it take for you to even get in on that deal? And then you're, you know, so, but nothing wrong with that, okay? If that's your thing, there's a lot of people that have become very wealthy off doing off commercial investing, multifamily investing, single family investing. A lot of people have become very wealthy, but it's not easy. And it takes
it's certainly not passive.
No. And it takes a lot of money to get started. And so when you look at some of these investment there's so many. I get probably two or three, maybe more, people every single day emailing through usually, you know, booking agents trying to get us to let them on our podcast to talk about how they're, you know, became gazillionaires from investing in, you know, whatever the hell it is. Usually it's in multifamily or commercial or whatever. Some, you know, Bob was a school teacher working in the inner city of Detroit, and all of a sudden he had a spark, and now he's figured out now he's got 800 doors. I mean, I guess it's a great story. But it's ubiquitous. And so what has happened is over time, that investment thesis has been essentially attacked from all the reasons I've described. Now we're adding in property taxes. Mm-hmm. Now we're adding in essentially just all these other things.
About eviction moratoriums.
It still works, guys, but it doesn't work like it did. But what does work, what has no trailing expenses against it, is revenue share from EXP. When you get your revenue share from EXP, there are no expenses against it. There is no managing of it. There's no property tax to worry about, no toilets to worry about, no roofs to replace, or trees to worry about falling on your EXP revenue share. And there are, like, I'll give you guys a true example. I know I'm friends with somebody who in 2000 and, I actually, you're not supposed to talk about money. We're not supposed to. Do you know that?
You could call it beads or beans.
Oh, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that clever.
I know.
But for most people listening, for you to make, it's a simple math game, right? So if you sponsor five agents for the next 5 years at EXP and they all stick around and they're all cappers, and in essence, after 5 years of having accomplished that, if I remember correctly, you'd be making about $15,000 passive from EXP just by sponsoring five agents.
So hover on that just for a second.
Yeah.
You said five agents. You didn't say 50.
15,000 a month, 180,000 a year. What?
Okay, but you said five agents. You didn't say 50. You didn't say 500. No. It's five.
Right.
There's no way, unless maybe you just got your real estate license and it'll take you a month to know a few agents. There's no way listeners don't know I mean, so many more than that. Five is such a low number to have such a high impact.
Hold on.
That's what impressed me.
Listeners,
we have to let the music go by.
Can you hear that horrible music in the background?
It's a constant party here.
Julie's point was really, I hope you guys heard what she said. So some of you are going to have explored eXp enough to know that the revenue share comes in from agents that you've sponsored or recruited in eXp. That is true. But what you don't realize is once you know what to say and how to say it, because so many people are already curious about eXp, having the sponsoring conversation is actually relatively straightforward and easy. And it's not because everyone wants the same thing. Everyone wants to be financially free. Everyone wants passive income. So I'm going to go back to what I was talking about before, and I'll use Julie and I as an example with our rental properties. I'm not sure how much all of our rental properties are worth. I'd have to go and add it all up because we have a crap ton of them. But the answer is millions of dollars. And the amount of money that we're making per month from our eXp association, you know, after about a year and a half, is exceeding our net cash flow from our rental properties. And this is best case scenario on the rental property side by quite a bit at this point. Mm-hmm. So we're probably making 30% more per month from our eXp revenue share after basically a year and a half versus the amount of money that we're making from our rental properties after, what, 25 years of investing?
It's incredible to think about.
It's depressing.
It does kind of piss me off, actually.
It does. It pisses me off, too, to be honest. If I had all that time and money back, I mean, think how much more fun we could have had, honestly.
Seriously.
Think how much
and
less...
I mean, I think, why didn't we have that thought that Glenn had?
Yeah, I know.
I know. But you're right.
I know. You know, it's true. I am jealous of that thought Glenn had because it's such a genius business.
And it is something that we probably would have come up with if we had put our minds to
it.
You know, I don't know. It's
no.
just so...
It's so...
I think it's so radical for a real estate brokerage because I can't name any other brokerages that are so agent-centric. I know a lot of them claim that they're agent-centric, but to actually have ownership and to have, and because of that ownership and because of the model, culturally, I have found
it's totally different.
That eXp is completely different.
Almost creepy, to be honest,
yeah.
how genuinely helpful people are.
Yeah, and I, for a long time, I had kind of just assumed that culture was kind of a bonus. If you know, if you're at a brokerage where you kind of like people and you kind of like your broker, that's great, but not to expect it because really that wasn't something that anybody prioritized. Really, it was all about, you know, the right split, the right, maybe a good location, and then the rest was, you know, lucky if you could get it. But I do find because everybody wins, that's so much more supportive. You know, you help agents all the time when they have questions.
I do.
And you call other people you know when you have questions. It's just, and I, you're never chasing each other down. Everybody
nope.
answers the phone all the time.
I mean, I've had numerous times agents that are in eXp who listen to our podcast mm-hmm. that aren't even partners with us in our eXp revenue share group.
Yeah.
They're in somebody else's group. So
sure.
that's translating. That's there's no direct financial benefit for me helping them sponsor somebody. And many times I've helped them sponsor somebody.
Sure.
You know, and that's, but I'm not alone. I'm not some sort of standout. There's so many people
that's
in the eXp that no matter what day or time it is, they would drop everything to help you. I've never experienced anything
like
that.
We're meeting with the eXp friends on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
they're coming to Puerto Rico. We know them through eXp.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a funny story. They've been associated with eXp for 3.5 years, I think.
Uh-huh.
And they are, well, again, I'm not really sure of the legality of discussing actual.
You can just be general.
They're making millions of dollars a year for revenue share.
Yeah.
That's the general statement.
After 3.5 years.
After 3.5 years. And they were the most they were probably making before that would have been maybe $250,000 a year, but because they've been associated with the so the thing you guys got to understand is the reason it's the right place at the right time is because a couple things. A, it's a brilliant business model.
Yeah.
I mean, Glenn and the managers and Jason and Dave and Stacy and Gene and all these other people that are essentially running the company and you know all the people, the CFO and the, you know, they're geniuses, especially Glenn. So when you look at the business mm-hmm. model itself, it's like, holy crap, it's almost too good to be true. But then you realize it's not, and there's lots of people, Julie and I, and, you know, really at this point, tens of thousands of others that are benefiting from this business model. But when you look at the business model and then you think about, okay, that's definitely the way forward for brokerages. There's no way a normal brokerage is ever going to compete with that business model. There's no way, no matter how much money Compass throws at an agent's not going to take a hard look at eXp because the money is going to be passive. Like you sponsor an agent today and eXp, that agent is going to, you know, you're going to be helping that agent financially and they're going to be rewarding you through revenue share forever, you know, as long as they stay at EXP. And so you can sponsor somebody today, and 5 years from now, you're still getting the benefit of having sponsored that agent, 10 years, 15 years. And that agent sponsors 10 other people, and you're going to get the benefit from that. A lot of people try to associate it with an MLM, and they think that's a bad thing. It's not an MLM, because EXP is not selling a product. EXP is a real estate brokerage that has a revenue share model on the back end. And unlike a traditional MLM that's all predicated on people being sold a business opportunity, the revenue share thing is not something everyone has to participate in. You don't have to sponsor agents to be a great EXP agent. You could just be at the brokerage. So just be very clear about that. But I don't have necessarily, a lot of people have, I think some MLMs out there are fantastic, honestly. We've never, ever been associated with one. Not out of, you know, righteousness, but probably more out of ignorance, to be honest with you.
No, but you make a good point is that you don't have to do any of that. I think some of them might be subconsciously thinking, well, gosh, I don't want somebody calling me, asking me who I've sponsored today and what I've done today. That's there if you want it. And if you go after it, immediately you will have help and a very high level of responsiveness. But nobody's going to make you do it. So if you're having some kind of little accountability flare-up, it's not like that at all. In fact, it's quite the opposite. You'll be so enthusiastic about doing it on your own, you don't need that.
Well,
most people.
You basically, when the first time you sponsor someone in, the first time you get, like our first revenue share check, I don't mind sharing this, was a massive number. You guys ready for this? You ready? $87.50.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Exactly. That was our first one. But, you know, the moral of the story is what we're trying to express to you. It's unless you're born on a lucky star or a silver spoon, unless you're, you know, best friends with the next Mark Zuckerberg, or you are the next Mark Zuckerberg, which is entirely possible.
Might be.
The probability of you being able to create enough passive income while you're still young enough to enjoy it, and you define what that, you know, age is, doing the things that, you know, we've all been taught to do traditionally, rental properties and stock market and running all these things, nothing is the same as the passive income you'll get from revenue share at EXP. Because even if you have a successful real estate practice and you have, you know, essentially that's a brilliant brokerage and you're making whatever, okay, you've done it better than anyone else, that is not passive income by very definition, because you have to manage the managers. Oh, Tim, I've delegated everything. Okay, I got it. But you still have to manage the managers. If you're an absentee landlord with property, you know, managing your properties are going to go to hell inside, you know, 90 days.
And you have to still pay the managers. Don't forget that.
Exactly. And the buck always stops with you. So if the economy slows down so the second reason, aside from the brilliant business model and incredible opportunity EXP is for agents and brokerages, and this one's counterintuitive, but the second huge reason why this is the right time to be involved with EXP, and you are in the right place at the right time if you take advantage of this, is because of the economy. And so there was an interesting article that came out last week, and we put this on our main website, timandjulieharris.com, that shows the number of people getting real estate licenses is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that seems for many of you to be counterintuitive, but it's not, because what people are doing is they're trying to create hedges towards their income. Maybe they're not that confident that their job's going to be relevant, so they're getting real estate licenses, or maybe they're looking for a replacement income, or maybe they've kept their jobs but their income's not the same from their jobs, so they're looking for, you know, other sources of income. The point is real estate licensees, the number of people getting into real estate is increasing. Now, at the same time, that's incredible. Where are they going to land? A lot of them, as soon as they learn about EXP, they're not going to even consider a brick and mortar office, because they're going to see what EXP offers. They're going to maybe listen to our podcast. They're going to say, why the hell would I join, you know, ABC Mortgage and not have any stock, not be an owner, not have a opportunity at revenue share, not be part of the fastest growing real estate brokerage in history. You know, all these things. And they're all going to gravitate towards EXP. That is the natural direction that the real estate industry is going. And if you're offended by what I'm saying, or if you're, you know, in any way emotionally distraught by what I'm saying, just hear me out. I'm trying to plead for your future. Julie and I right now are doing our best to try to get you to detach from whatever your emotional mooring lines are and realize that a year from now, to my point about the economy, everything's going to be different. And by different, I mean dramatically different. And Julie and I have been, you know, reading statistics on today's show, but also on our normal show, and certainly our coaching clients. They know what the looming foreclosure short sale crisis is going to be like, because we've been preparing all of you. We've been telling you what the actual numbers are going to be like in terms of the recession that's probably going to turn into a depression. Guys, we're not in a V-shaped recovery. This is going to be a long-term, 3 to 5 year cycle. and the real estate market that we're heading into is not going to be a seller's market. You're going to see distressed sellers and different, you know, at different levels come out of the woodwork probably within 6 months. And maybe if some of you aren't taking what we're saying seriously, you might be one of them, unfortunately. And I'm sorry for you if that's the case. But here's the punchline. As these real estate brokerages try to meet their financial obligations from following this obsolete brick-and-mortar business model, they're not going to be able to when the real estate transaction volume slows down. Most real estate brokerages, if you have a real estate brokerage with 100 agents in it, you're going to be lucky if you have 15 agents in your office that are productive. So those 15 agents, your whole cash flow is you know, dependent on them selling houses. If they're not selling houses, or if, you know, half of them leave and go to a different, you know, go to eXp, your real estate brokerage, which was probably making less than 3% per year, is wiped out. And now you're carrying all this fixed cost. And now you're carrying all these agents that aren't producing. And now you're going into a slower recession. What are you going to do? You're going to then have to borrow from yourself. You're going to have to sell your rental properties. You're going to have to try to get loans. You're going to go broke painfully and slowly. And that's what happens. That's what happened back in 07, 08, 09. And that's what's going to happen now. You know, if you are thinking about, as a real estate broker or a team holder, how can I create a hedge towards that inevitable future? The answer is revenue share. The answer is being part of eXp. The answer is looking forward and stop trying to keep yourself attached to old ways of thinking and old business models. What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, like I said before, you know, not taking that seriously is just so financially irresponsible. I really believe that, especially after when I hear some of our eXp coaching clients say, it's so funny, it's like the first time they had a great listing experience. They go, you're not gonna believe, I looked in my bank account today and there was $400. That was my first revenue share. They're so excited about that.
Right.
Especially when it's like they're not really consciously thinking of it. Like
it just happens.
It just happens.
And then you tell them that they were also given stock because they sold their first house.
That's right.
And the person they sold, the person they sponsored sold their first house.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's,
and they were
that's
given,
exciting to me.
They were given the stock awards,
yes.
Right.
So just to clarify, when Tim says they didn't buy it or they were given it or they were awarded it, you're literally given it. It's like a stock gift.
Yep.
Awesome.
They give you, so when you sell, when you sponsor somebody and that person sells their first house, you are awarded, it's just a 3-year vest, but you're awarded $400 worth of EXPI stock. And so since we started a year and a half ago, we have literally thousands of shares of EXPI stock, of which we didn't buy any. So that's the same situation all of you guys can be in. Even if you're just a low, let's say you're the worst sponsor of agents ever, you're just terrible at it, the numbers, because of the momentum this company has, are still on your side. Everybody is EXP curious. There's very, very few
especially
people in
now.
The country that don't know. Exactly. And as the economy gets worse, you're going to have more people EXP curious, is what we call it. And so for those of you who are EXP curious, there's a really cool video you can watch that gives you an overview. It's, I think, 7 or 9 minutes. And all you've got to do is text the word EXP to 31996. Just text the word EXP to 31996. It talks about the brokerage. It talks about agent services. It talks about lead generation. It talks about how teams work, how the cap works. It talks about revenue share. It talks about stock. It talks about all that stuff. So just text the word EXP to 31996. Text the word EXP to 31996. And let's get the conversation started. If you want to talk with Julie and I about being a partner with us in our EXP revenue share group, and our EXP revenue share group is called Libertas. And Libertas, there's a big fly on your foot. And Libertas is Latin for freedom. Okay, that's what that word means. And our revenue share group is called Libertas. If you want to talk with us about being a partner in our revenue share group, just text me directly, 512-758-0206. 512-758-0206. 512-758-0206. If you're just in the getting, you know, you're just in the curious stage, just go ahead and watch that video. And then after you've watched that video, if you ever want to have a conversation with me, that's great. And again, you just have to text the word EXP to 31996. So I can honestly tell you guys, if I were, you know, Julie and I just got married again, right? You know, she's 20 and I'm 21. Mm-hmm. We get married at, actually, you remember the name of the church we got married at, the Presbyterian Church? I just had a little epiphany. I remember.
Remind me.
Okay, for I'll give you a hint.
Tell me, sorry.
Evan
has much caffeine.
Liberty.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, and liberty and libertas
that's
are the
right,
same word.
Presbyterian Church.
Oh my gosh,
Ohio.
That's weird.
That is weird. Precursor. Thank you, Pastor Tim and Julie.
Yeah, the church we got married at in Powell,
yeah, right.
Ohio,
was Liberty
Presbyterian Church. And that was almost, you realize that next month is our 29th wedding anniversary?
I do.
Right. And I wish that I could have had this opportunity for you, frankly, and for us back then.
Me too.
How would our lives have been different, honestly, if we could have built, like, we sold real estate 100 to 200 homes a year for about a decade, and then we got into coaching. So if we had to do it all over again, and we knew about revenue share, I bet you that we would have been living in, you know, the Ritz-Carlton in Puerto Rico when we were about, you know, 32.
Mm-hmm. Opposed, had the option for it,
opposed to our late 40s, you know?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, so it's just, it's fascinating that...
Well, the many impacts that it would have had. Well, yeah. that it is.
I mean, how would your life have been different in retrospect, honestly?
I think we would have had more kids sooner, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me too.
Because I would not have been using that as an excuse. Well, I gotta go to another closing. Gotta go buy another rental property.
It wasn't really an excuse, though.
You know, I mean, it was reality.
Real. Yeah.
It was reality.
But what? How else would your life have been different? You can
had,
be selfish.
We would have had more freedom sooner, for sure, to your Libertas point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that I think the fact that you named our EXP group Libertas should show our listeners see how absolutely serious we are about this conversation.
Yep.
For all of them, you know, you didn't have to do it that way.
If you're in your 20s or your 30s, or really even your 40s, and you're listening to this podcast and you have a real estate license, if you don't take this seriously, you're just.
Well, here's the thing.
I don't even know what to tell you.
If you're especially 20s or 30s, but even even some of our older listeners, but you know, if you're just in the first stages of your career, being with EXP really makes it, it's like they're building two careers simultaneously.
That's right.
But the second one doesn't take near the effort as the first one.
It's passive.
And that's so unique. I can't name another thing, really, that's like that.
When you sponsor somebody at EXP, you do have an obligation to help them get going in the right direction. But after they've got going in the right direction, it's pretty much hands off. And every time they sell something or something that they sponsor sells somebody, it's something all the way down to seven levels, you're getting paid off that. So when you have somebody like, you know, Julie, say she sponsors somebody at EXP and they pay their cap, and their cap is only $16,000, Julie gets $2,400. Now, if somebody they sponsor then caps, you know, pays in their $16,000, Julie gets $3,200, right?
And on and on.
And that's the thing, and it's passive. So there are people in our revenue share group, and I try my best to get to know every single one of them. We do constant training and motivation and... You know, we do. You guys think we're off the hook when it comes to our podcast. You used to see all the things we do to support our revenue share group. But there are people in our revenue share group that we don't know and that we might ever not ever know, that when they sell something, we're sitting here in Puerto Rico at the beach and we're getting a portion of the revenue that comes in from that commission
check. But we don't not know them because we don't want to know them. It's because they're several stages removed from our original sponsorship.
Yeah, Julie sponsors Bob, and Bob sponsors Sally, and Sally sponsors Steve, and Steve sponsors that. And we don't know. And so we have people now, I think, in every single state in the nation and in Canada that are part of our revenue share group. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. And we've done this in a year and a half. And okay, you're best-selling authors. You have this big coaching company and you have this big podcast. You guys had an unfair advantage. We did. We absolutely did. But you have the benefit of being part of our group, because when you are part of our Libertas EXP family, we're going to help you do the same thing. We're going to provide you constant care and feeding, constant training, constant support. I mean, believe it or not, guys, if you have, if you're part of our group and you want to sponsor somebody and you don't know what to say or how to say it, you text me and I, you know, text you back, and then I'll call that person and I'll get them sponsored under you. So you'll be their sponsor. I do that probably. I don't do it as frequently as I used to, because so many of the other people we have in our group now are able to handle it themselves because we have so many more people experienced. But I probably do it two or three times a day where I'll get on the phone on behalf of somebody who's in our group and I'll do the work for him, you know, and that's it. And so that's the kind of support you'd have being part of our group, because we want all of you guys to have the full advantage, you know, have the full benefits of being part of EXP. It's something we're genuinely excited about, because it's in perfect alignment with what our mission has always been personally, but also professionally, to give you guys a way forward that's going to create alternative financial, you know, futures that you would otherwise never been able to have. I mean, if you guys right now, going back to our original, you know, thought when we started, I don't even know how long we've been talking, if you had $7,500 coming in per month, you would be financially free, most of you. That I did that survey, by the way. That's how I know the number is $7,500.
Yeah, I'm not guessing at that.
No, I'm not guessing. The mic is...
I can't move it.
Well, get your little...
I'm trying not to make noise here.
Yeah. So the reality of it is that most of you had $7,500. So if you want to join EXP and you want to, you know, you do the sponsoring, become part of the revenue share opportunity, you probably can create, and it depends on who you sponsor, it depends on where you are and their price range and all that. But realistically, most people, if with given a, you know, you set aside some, you know, time every day, you maybe you just, you know, I know a lot of people that just, you know, will focus on sponsoring conversations just on Fridays. I strongly encourage everyone to do it for a half hour to an hour a day, you know, because then you can build momentum. But there is a high probability that all of you could create $7,500 a month in that range in passive income from revenue share at EXP within the next 3 to 5 years if you basically had a path to follow, if you knew how many people to follow. And there's a lot of information out there, a lot of people that have given presentations. And you can, again, just text the word EXP to 31996 and you can start seeing how the math works. But the timing right now is perfect because the world is going to push the real estate industry towards EXP. Because of the nature of the economy and because of the nature of the lack of profitability in real estate teams and real estate brokerages. So you can be part of that conversation. You know, I'll give you guys a for example. We have, in our group, we sponsored, and by we, I mean I didn't, someone, so I sponsored someone named Sean. Sean sponsored someone named Eric. And now Eric sponsored someone named Bob. Well, Bob is and I didn't even know Bob, right? But Bob is probably going to bring in, probably 30 or 40 people within the next 6, maybe 7 months. Now, that 30 or 40 people statistically may grow to hundreds, if not thousands, of people within 2 or 3 years. All those people that came in from Bob, who I had no direct contact with, who I do now, but I didn't originally, all those people, when they sell something, we're going to get a little portion of that revenue, right? You guys get it? So this.
And by the way, you don't have to stay within your own city or your own state. You can sponsor anybody anywhere. A lot of you guys have been networking with agents like your whole agent career.
That's right.
It's pretty awesome.
You know, it's funny too. I know some people are, oh my God, it's an MLM and da da da. Well, but isn't every business an MLM? I mean, if you think about it, when somebody's like an agent at in a normal real estate brokerage, when they sell something, isn't the manager getting paid something? Isn't the owner getting paid something? If it's a franchise, isn't the region holder getting something? Aren't all the people that are involved in that, you know, that franchise brokerage, aren't they all getting paid something? Isn't that essentially the same thing? Aren't they all essentially revenue sharing on up? Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. And yet some of you, you're the very thing that's going to keep you always having to have that financial burden is these thoughts that you have that aren't rooted in reality about, you know, different ways that different people make money. I mean, that's just really, that's the punchline with all this. And if you think about a normal business, I mean, when you go to have your teeth cleaned, you know, the gal at the front desk, you know, the person that's going to, you know, do the initial cleaning of your teeth, and the dentist and the person who owns the dental practice, and maybe it's a franchise too, aren't all those people getting paid off of the same, you know, transaction of you actually having your teeth cleaned? Do you guys get it? Every single business, our country, is predicated on people being productive and other people getting the benefit from it. There's no downside. That's how life works. You know, when you pay your tuition for your kid at college, right? Think of all the different people that are getting paid all the way up the food chain from that tuition bill getting paid. Do you guys have a conflict with the fact that mm-hmm. when Julie pays her private school for Zoe, do I have a conflict with the fact that the provost is getting, you know, paid part of his salary from the money that Julie? No, that's just how life works. And yet some of you guys, when it comes to how you can directly have that sort of model benefit you, you have all these ridiculous notions about, it's kind of weird. It doesn't make any sense. It's going to keep you broke. It absolutely will keep you broke. You know, there's so many examples like that. That's just old thinking. That's fallacy. That's the type of thinking that will make you lean on business models and ideas that really don't work as well as they used to if they ever worked at all.
That's right. So, you know, that's the cool thing about this is it's easily curable. None of what we've talked about is that difficult. None of it is so far out of any of our listeners' wheelhouse that it's going to be complicated or confusing or too analytical. And, you know, there are a few things you got to figure out. But you know what? You guys do weekly calls where you're talking to each other about what does this mean and what's the best practice for that. You don't have to go to those calls, but they're there for everybody to take advantage of.
You mean we are Libertas.
Yeah, Libertas is to help everybody out. So, you know, it may be temporary, I don't know if you would call it financial ignorance or business maturity that is working against them, but that's curable. That's why we talk about this stuff on the podcast, is to help you guys.
If you and I were in this position 29 years ago, you know, and someone was pitching us on EXP, I think I naturally would have been a skeptic. Because I had all this bad information about MLMs. MLMs bad. MLMs are scams,
and it's
right?
easy to say, well, that's an MLM. I'm not going
to. And it would have taken somebody to be able to explain to me how it's EXP is not an MLM and how it's a revenue share model that you can or can't if you choose to participate in it.
Well, so now we're full circle with the very beginning of our podcast where you were talking about why the email person was saying, I don't know if I can be emotionally attached to this whole financially, you know, your money working for you, you not having to work for money. I'm not sure I get that because I can't really relate to that. Well, it's because you didn't have podcasts like this in your head
yet. Exposure.
It's because you didn't have exposure. And I'll tell you, I will confess to EXP hasn't been around that long, but for the
10 years.
For the early years, you'd hear about it as a coach from time to time. And my initial thing was like, what is that? Why would you want to be virtual or whatever? Okay. And then we went to an actual meeting about EXP where I saw actual people get on stage one after another, saying the impact that $5,000 a month, $3,500 a month. It wasn't that it was the $3,500. It was that it was month in and month out. Think about that.
That they didn't have to work for.
That's what changed my outlook. That was my exposure. My lack of exposure until that time. And then I had that big aha moment where I was like, well, heck. I mean, we're the ones that preach about multiple spokes. What the hell are we doing?
But right? this, what I, you know what? It's ego, too.
But I remember that.
But ego ultimately plays into it. Because the thing that's kind of I don't know. You and I are bootstrappers, and we're all, you know, the sort of traditional American values, and nobody gave us anything. And yeah, maybe true, maybe not. But here's the moral of the story. The thing that makes this difficult to accept, at least it would have been for me, and I think it was for me, was the fact that it's not that difficult.
I know. It's so counterintuitive.
I'm so used to things being a struggle.
Yeah. Or that that the actual numbers would have had to have been so much bigger, maybe it was unobtainable.
People are lying. No one's making that much money. I mean, those are the thoughts that
And then we went to that event in Texas, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
I know.
You know? So, but to land the plane from earlier, that, you know, get yourself that exposure. And the first thing to do is the video. That is the beginning of your exposure of the reality of EXP. You owe it to yourself to at least have that baseline education.
That's right. Know what you're saying no to, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Otherwise, I don't know. Don't quite buy that no.
Yeah, so text the word EXP to 31996, or we want to move the conversation forward and talk about Julie and I's EXP family and be part of Libertas. Just text me directly at 512-758-0206. So Julie was rounding the bend quite nicely. And yeah, for the people who are wondering, like, what would it emotionally feel like to be you know, rich, where your money works for you, you no longer work for your money, where you're financially free, there's nothing that compares. There's nothing that compares to the gift that you can give to yourself. It allows you the gift of being present. As a self-employed person, my entire life, and Julie as well, you are never completely present because the antivirus software is always running in the back of your mind, worrying about a deal, worrying about closings, the worry is always the omnipresent thing. You will still have that initial pang of worry, but then when you remind yourself you have passive income coming in, enough to basically give yourself and your family financial security from your past efforts, that worry, it might still, you know, ring true. It might still be there because maybe some of you are never going to be able to completely get rid of it. I probably won't, truthfully. It's become so woven into my, you know, neurological pathways. But now the counterbalance to it is it's not relevant anymore. I don't need to worry. It's just an old habit. I don't need to have those thoughts. And guys, the sense of freedom that all of you guys can have from experiencing that, and maybe your number's $3,500 a month, maybe it's $2,500 a month, maybe it's $5,000, maybe it's $7,000, but you can be selling real estate, making money from selling real estate, making probably more money from selling real estate at EXP. You can be benefiting from the appreciating stock, which will create you long-term savings, which some of you will never have otherwise. Just cold, hard reality. Average American only has $400 saved. And then you could be on your way to creating retirement income or income enough to make it so that the money you make from selling real estate, because we're not suggesting you stop selling real estate, the money you make from selling real estate can go to doing other things like having fun, you know, can go to having better life experiences or buying the new car and just doing different things. It creates multiple streams of income that, frankly, if you don't do something like this, unless you have some, you know, gift from God that lands in your lap, some Willy Wonka winning golden ticket, unless you have something like that happen for you, the probability of you being able to accomplish what we just laid out for you in your lifetime is statistically zero. So do take this seriously, guys. You know, don't be buttheads like we were and waiting as long as we did. We shouldn't have waited to align with eXp Realty. You know, it's been a huge win for our coaching company. It's been a huge win for us personally. We've made so many great friends, and financially, obviously. So you can just text EXP, just the letters EXP to 31996, or if you're ready to move forward and you want to join with Julie and I, just text me directly at 512-758-0206. And you know what? We hadn't planned on talking about EXP, but we almost always do.
I know. Well, that's because we have such enthusiasm for it.
It's funny, though, isn't it?
It's easy to talk about something that you care so much for.
I know, but is that funny? It is what you said. It's gratitude.
Yeah.
It's gratitude towards Glenn and the opportunity and all of our friends.
Yeah. And I think I also do, and I think you do too, and I think all of our coaches do, feel a legitimate responsibility to help all of our listeners the way EXP has helped us. And the way it's helped our coaching clients.
Me too,
and a lot
especially
of our
podcast listeners.
Sure, I do. I feel obligated to that.
Me too.
Why would we keep that a secret? That's kind of nutballs.
Yeah, and well, it's because there's a certain percent out there that are going to basically be washing us, you know, basically Tim and Julie are, you know, kooks and whatever, and that's fine. You guys will most likely regret not having taken this seriously in the near future, like in next year. But even if you do feel skeptical, even if you do feel a little bit, you know, angry that we talked about this, and, you know, brokerage for some people is like, you know, a religion is so weird. Yeah. You know, you don't think like business people, but if you just can set those emotions aside and just watch the video, you know, by texting EXP to 31996, or if you're ready to move forward, just text me directly, 512-758-0206. You will find that the future you, 6 months, 12 months from now, will look back saying and realizing it was the best business decision that you made, even despite yourself. You know, that's the reality of it.
It's okay. If you know, if the first step is to just be curious, then you owe it to yourself to text to, you know, EXP to 31996. I think Howard Brent used to say, get out of judgment and into curiosity.
That's for sure.
And so that's a great first step.
That's right. All right. You guys have a fantastic day. Thank you for helping put, I think this is show 3,080 or 3,079 in the can. So you guys have a fantastic day. We'll talk to you on the regular podcast tomorrow.